Same for the temperature.
Okay.
The purpose of today's meeting is to conclude the redeliberations of the exposure draft clarifications to IFRS 15 by deciding the transition requirements and the effective date of the clarifying amendments to IFRS 15. For convenience, I will tee up each section of the paper and open the meeting for discussion and vote. The first section of the paper, which is paragraphs 4 to 10, discusses the feedback on transition requirements. The IASB proposed that the clarifying amendments should be applied retrospectively. TARC's alternative views were included in the exposure draft. Respondents generally did not comment on the transition proposals, except for one preparer group that agreed with TARC's alternative view. We recommend to finalize the proposals in the ED to require an entity to apply the clarifying amendments retrospectively. Further, we also think that special transition provisions are not required for a first-time adopter for the reasons explained in paragraph 10 of the paper. So over to you for comments.
Doc?
I do understand that this is not the big problem, but it's not really matters. Actually, I disagree with staff's recommendation. This because this is against the principle of early application. Suppose you are a car manufacturer and you have a brand new car released last year and some customer bought your cars and all of a sudden you find some problems in the car, and then those cars would not be allowed to run in the public road. So then do you charge the same price again to that customer? What we are doing is something similar to this. So it doesn't really matter whether the number of customers is millions or number of customers is only one. Even if the customer is only one, I don't think we can charge it again. So therefore, this is totally against the principle of early application. Therefore, I cannot agree with staff's recommendation. And can I ask the question about the transition treatment of transition of completed transactions, completed contract? You are saying that if we allow prospective application, we would lose comparability. The comparability you are talking about is obviously comparability across the terms, I mean trend. However, we already provide modified retrospective application. In the modified retrospective application, we do not require retrospective application of the for the completed transaction. The reason why we are not requiring a retrospective application of a completed contract is because it's impossible. Suppose you are a retailer, you may have millions of transactions which is already completed. So then you have to revisit every single millions of transactions. It's not possible. So therefore, we allow not doing the retrospective application. However, in your proposal, you are requiring to revisit all of the transactions retrospectively and restate it. So it's unbelievable. Why do you asking something more than those who are applying IFRS for the first time in 2018. So that is what I can't understand. So could you explain why?
I mean, on the comparability part, I think for an entity which applies the modified retrospective method, I think IFRS 15 does require disclosure of what would have been the revenue if IAS 18 was continued. So I think on the trend information is generally there irrespective of the method, the transition method the entity applies.
But I'm talking about completed transaction.
But Jack, isn't there a difference between, if I understand what you're saying or your perhaps your proposal would be, that there is a difference because with the completed contract relief, what you've got is a situation where, let's say, in the first year you apply IFRS 15, everything's under the new standard, and the previous year is under the old standard, so it's completely clean. With what you'd be suggesting is, you'd have a situation whereby
the financials that were purportedly under IFRS 15 would be a mixture of pre and post clarifications. So I think that is slightly different.
Yes,
but to me, it still goes back a little bit to the point that I said to you back in when we last discussed this, which is, I mean, this either goes two ways. Either the clarifications really have very little impact on an entity, mm-hmm. and therefore I don't think it'll be a big deal for an entity that has early adopted, or, and I don't know what the scenario would be, is, but they do actually have a more substantial impact, in which case then it seems to me that the retrospective application of them is quite important to ensure that you get that sort of comparability of application of IFRS 15. So, I think perhaps, you know, you're making a bigger point about it than is justified by the nature of the amendments that we're making. I also, thinking about what you're saying about to try and achieve what you're wanting to achieve, which I think is to effectively not restate, if you've early adopted, not restate contracts that have completed since you first applied IFRS 15, before you apply the clarification, I just think that's going to be quite a complex piece of drafting to engineer. Because you can't, where you can't use the existing definition of a completed contract.
Because
that links to
IS 18
and IS 11.
But there are two types of completed contracts. The completed contract which applied IS 18. The other completed contract is completed contract applied current IFRS 15 before the clarification. So suppose the company adopted IFRS 15 last year, and then they have 3 years to go until the effective date. So until that time, they may have millions of transactions which is completed under current IFRS.
Yeah.
And what we are requiring is you have to revisit every single transaction, whether or not if you need retrospective application. That is basically what we are saying, because we do not give the same relief to those who have applied IFRS earlier. So that is what I can't understand. We give a big relief to those who have been applying IS 18 up until 2018, but we are not giving any relief
but
those who have applied IFRS 15 earlier.
Yeah, but I
can't understand why.
We're talking about the difference between an entity that didn't apply the new standard and is moving to IFRS 15, which in certain cases, that's a major transition.
Yeah.
And we're talking then about an entity that it moves from IFRS 15 pre-clarifications to post-clarifications. I think those are just different scale transitions.
It's not a matter of different scale. You cannot know whether there is a different scale or not,
well,
unless you visit.
Can I ask you
my point is, you know, we are requiring them to revisit every single transaction. That's the point.
But what would be the example you're thinking of? Because I mean, if you've decided that these clarifications have virtually very little impact on you going forward, because that's how you were reading IFRS 15 already, I don't think you'd literally have to go back and revisit all of your past transactions one by one.
Because I mean, practically, an entity would start assessing the impact of the clarifications with the ongoing contracts. I mean, if the clarifications do have an effect on the ongoing contracts, then it makes sense for the entity to go back and revisit the old contracts as well. So I mean, from a practical standpoint, not sure how much big is the deal of moving to these clarifications.
But you wouldn't know unless you revisit. So actually, we made a clarification about the principal and the agent. Although the concept itself is same, but the literature is completely different, and then the process of the judgment would be different because we have reversed the agent and principal. So then if we follow that rules, you have to go through in a different way. And also we have changed the concept of performance obligation. And substantially, we have made a change the literature. And although we think there isn't a big change, but you know, my point is whether or not the company has to reconsider single transaction which has already completed, I don't think it's necessary. So if it is not necessary, why do we ask? And I take your point, you know, company can make a judgment, but you know, auditor wouldn't agree with that judgment. Auditor could require the company, you have to prove your judgment is correct. If that is the case, entity has to revisit. That is what we are requiring. I don't understand why we require such a thing for those who have applied earlier, whereas we are not requiring that same thing to those who have not applied yet. And the difference could be much bigger than those who have applied IFRS 15 earlier. So I cannot understand the concept of what we are doing. It is totally against the principle of early application. And the reason why I stick to this issue is because this is really against the principle of early application. Because if we did such kind of things, then nobody would apply earlier, because it could change. The standard could change. And if it changed, you would be required to restate. So then nobody would be happy to apply a standard earlier.
I have some sympathy for what the company is saying. If the impact would be small to begin with, why not just give a general exemption?
Just thinking how
it is. If it would be laborious, which is unlikely, if it would be laborious, it would be like a punishment.
In my alternative view, I said prospectively.
Yeah.
The prospectively could cause some problem of transition. So I take that point.
So
but at least we can give the same relief.
So you don't need to restate.
Yeah,
a
we don't need to restate
that has completed
under
IFRS 15.
Yeah.
I'm nervous about doing that because we have a general principle of retrospective application, and I think we should have a high hurdle for moving away from retrospective application. We do it in this case, I'm thinking, well, we make a small modification to a standard, well, it's not that big, so we won't apply it retrospectively. I think we should have a high hurdle for moving away from full retrospective application.
I can't understand the whole. We are giving relief to those who are applying the IS 18. Why do you think it's, you know, not possible for those who have applied IFRS 15? So the difference between IS 15 and
IS
18.
I take your point, and we have given the relief for the IS 18.
Yeah.
But we did it as an exception, because of the cost of the transitional.
The same cost would incur for those who have applied IFRS 15 already.
But I think Henry was saying it's not to the same scale.
If
we hadn't provided the relief for IAS 18, would we now provide the relief in this case? We were looking at it simply as a standalone decision.
All your reasoning about the incentives or disincentives for early adopting would apply if we had not provided any relief for IFRS 15 scenario Steve just laid out.
I think the additional point here is that the exposure draft contained both our view, the view that we've been asked to vote on now, and the alternative view. Only one respondent came back saying that they thought that we should go with the, and if my understanding of what that respondent said was effectively they didn't think it would have a significant effect,
exactly.
Therefore don't. They didn't pick up that they thought this would be a very costly exercise.
Exactly.
I think the other problem is it might not have a significant effect except for one or two companies, in which case you may really want to know what that effect is. So
that was always my concern.
Yeah.
So
So, so what is that last comment leading to?
So I would stick with where we, with the yeah, recommendation.
Goes back to Steve's point saying there could be a sort of unintended consequence.
Pat?
I just had an observation about one of the decisions made during the development of the ED that we have summarized in the appendix in the back. And yeah, there's some of these that you know I wished had gone perhaps in a different direction, but of all of these, the one that strikes me to be the most odd is this one dealing with measuring non-cash consideration. Here, the FASB came out with very specific guidance and said you measure it at the inception of a contract. Our guidance essentially says that we noted the approach required by the FASB and, if finalized, would not be the only acceptable interpretation of IFRS 15. Now, when you go back to the ED, you'll note, and to our agenda paper when we discussed this, there were three different possibilities we laid out. We're now essentially going to say to preparers, you've got three different ways you can apply the application of non-cash consideration. And I don't know too many areas of IFRS right now that we're developing that we create so many different options and are so permissive. In fact, I think we try to avoid that. But here, we're actually promoting it. And I you know, on a specific issue where in theory we're adding more guidance and providing more interpretation, we go in the exact opposite direction. We punt and we say, actually there's three different ways you can do this. In my mind, that just it's not sound. We say non-cash consideration can be measured at contract inception. It can be measured when the non-cash consideration is received or receivable. And we can say it's the earlier of the date of when it's received the receivable and the date that the related performance obligation is satisfied. So I would have preferred to have picked one, whether I liked it or not, and whether it's converged with the FASB or not, and then move forward in order to build, you know, conformity and comparability. So this is one that I think this is not our finest moment in this series of discussions.
So what's your answer to question one?
Well, when we come to vote on it, I'll let you know. But I guess the observation here is I think this is going to come back to our interpretations committee because people are going to say, you know, I see practice evolving this way, I see other people doing that way. We really think that, you know, it makes sense to come to a more definitive answer.
Okay, Chung Wu, and then we go to folks.
Okay, thank you. I have some sympathy with the talks. The question before making a vote. Clarification: if we adopt the progressive application rather than retrospective, do we have any kind of big problems? As a, is there any some kind of very unintended consequences? The reason why I'm saying is in your paragraph 8. This amendment is just kind of clarification. There's no big change. So your reason why we are suggesting retrospective application is this is just a clarification. There's no big change. That means we can do the both ways, you know. If there's no big change, then we can apply the retrospective. Or you know, the prospective, because there's no big change. So this logic can apply to both ways. That's one reason why I'm suggesting to think about the prospective. Because if there is a big problem, even though the number is very small, if there's a big problem if we apply the retrospective application, however, the result is the same, even though we are using the retrospective prospective, the result is the same because of clarification. However, the first some adopters might have problem. Then we can fix the problem by changing our application method. Another thing is this is a very special case, not just a typical amendment of the some standards, because this is a really special case. After we issued a 15, mm-hmm. but based on this kind of convergence work with the US, we are or later we are forced to amend this kind of clarification things on 15. That's why I'm suggesting we should think about the prospective application. So I'm asking that if we do a prospective application, do you have big problems?
We exposed this for comment.
Yes.
I'm a bit wary about taking the comments from one letter and doing a U-turn. I know that people here, some people feel strongly, but I think we need to be careful to make a U-turn on something where we've got one letter disagreeing with our proposal.
Okay. I think the issue boils down to if it has a significant impact. Obviously, prospective means that potentially you're going to have two bases of accounting running forward for many years, and I think you kind of accepted that, which is why you've modified your suggestion. The downside, I think, of what you're suggesting about giving relief on the completed contracts is if in some unusual circumstances the clarifications have a significant impact, then effectively the information that is presented as being comparable under IFRS 15 would not be. I mean, and that's what it boils down to. I think what you said earlier on about saying, you know, we fundamentally change performance obligations, I personally don't agree with. I really do think that this is about clarifying. So I do think the situations whereby this would cause a significant change would be limited.
Just okay, before voting, let me respond to the Steve's and Darrell's comment. I think what Stephen said is substantially saying we should not permit early application. Because you said that, you know, comparability is important and the retrospective application is the norm. I understand that. However, we allowed exception to those who apply at the effective date and do not allow it for those who have applied earlier. So then we bring the principle back to the person who have applied earlier. So substantially, it's penalizing those who have applied earlier. So therefore, eventually we are saying that you should not apply earlier unless everything is clear. And if we found some mistake of ourselves, we will punish you. So that's not acceptable. And also, going back to this particular issue, this is the relief of completed transaction. And we gave such a big relief to everybody, except those who have applied earlier. And many people said the impact is not big. However, my point is, as long as you require retrospective application, that company has to revisit every single transaction in theory. Of course, it depends on the negotiation with the auditors, but in theory, as long as you require retrospective application, in theory, they have to look through whether or not there is a significant impact or not. That is why we gave up asking for retrospective application. We totally gave up, you know, asking to revisit a completed transaction. So I still cannot understand why do we have to treat it differently.
Jay?
Okay, let's see who can support staff recommendation.
Go on. Moving on to the next section of the paper, the question of finalization or re-exposure. Based on our analysis in paragraphs 11 to 19 of the paper, we think that your final decisions made in December 2015, especially your decision to amend paragraph 29 of IFRS 15 to align with the FASB's decisions to amend topic 606 and also to allow an entity using the modified retro transition method to apply IFRS 15 to all contracts, including completed contracts, are not fundamental changes from the proposals in the ED. Consequently, we conclude that there is no need for re-exposure.
So we agree.
All in favour?
In relation to the mandatory effective date of the amendments, during the discussions leading to the development of the exposure draft, you have already concluded that the effective date of the clarifications should be aligned with the effective date of IFRS 15 for reasons explained in paragraphs 20 to 24 of the paper. Very few respondents commented on the effective date, and all of them agreed with your conclusion to align the two dates. Consequently, we recommend that the mandatory effective date of the clarifications should be 1st of January 2018, which is the revised effective date of IFRS 15.
Do we agree?
All in favour?
As summarised in Appendix C of the paper, we note that the required due process steps applicable so far in the development of clarifications to IFRS 15 have been completed. So with that, we have questions 4, 5 and 6. Of the paper.
So do we believe that all due process steps have been done? Yes.
All in favour?
All in favour. Does anybody want to dissent?
Tak.
And do we give permission to ballot?
All in favour.
All right.
Thank you.
That's it for this.